accession number 29168, reel 2.
Okay, hang on a sec. So Alf Burrows, reel 2. Were you trained for the tropics in any way? Did you know what to expect? Had they...
No. All I know is we had all our injections. See, because previous to that, you know, when I was still working at Short Brother, the years before that, we flew out to Persia. Flew out to Persia. And I flew out there with the... Now, what was he called? He was a speedway rider, car rider, something like Donald Cannibal. Henry Seagrave. I flew out with him, and the Sultan of... the Shah out there, Persia, as it was called then. And then, I don't know. There was a rugby time there for 3 or 4 days, and there was 6 of us went out all together in this plane. And I was the only one who had any injections, you know. 4 of them died soon after they came back, after 4 or 5 days out there, through Agu. Agu is something like malaria, only about 10 times worse. Blimey.
They died, it killed them off.
Huh? Mm. So I was lucky there. And now I suppose that the injections I had out there carried me throughout the Far East, because no matter how many mosquitoes bit me, I never got malaria. They used to say, you're in your house. I reckon I'll kill them with my blood.
When was that trip to Persia? That was that trip to Persia was before the war, when you were working at Shorts.
What?
When you went to Persia, that was before the war.
Before the war, yeah. Right. I was only about 17.
What a lovely experience that must have been. Hmm? What a lovely experience that must have been for a 17-year-old.
Oh, I've been there in South Africa, been the bottom Victoria floors when one of our planes went down there.
So you did fly in these planes?
No, I flew in them, but I wasn't a very part of them.
No, of course not. So
I had to fly by the plane, the old Singapore flying boat. They had canvas wings, they did.
And where did you spend the night when you flew down to South Africa before?
Oh, we spent it on the river. And the boat in our plane.
On the Nile, I suppose.
No, not the Nile. Zambezi.
Where did you stop before that?
Well, you could fly from England down to there. Those flying boats, good.
What was it like flying in a flying boat? You flew at about, 150 knots, 200 knots?
The old Singapore and the Calcutta, their top speed was about 120. That was. And when we got onto the Sunderlands, they came up to 200 and something. You know, they weren't all that fast, the Sunderlands.
Was it comfortable?
Yeah. I used to like it in the Blimmin' canvas wing planes, you know, they were more comfortable still. But something I don't. Of course,
what was the inside of the planes like? Were they?
Somewhat. Well, when you come to the Sunderland, you're talking about modern stuff. But the Singapore was just like an ordinary plane. But you see all the blooming ribs and that. There was nothing covering there. Not like the passenger planes. The Sunderland had pretty near everything covered in.
And your job was you were there like a sort of a...
Well, I only had to go out there and work on the plane. But try to get the bugger started again. But there was one place, I wasn't there when that happened. When I was in the services, I think, at the top of the River Nile. A plane came down there and they couldn't get him out. So they built a village there, a proper village, and got him out. And that village is still quite good, as it right up the north of the Nile. There's a lot of things went on with these flying boats, you know.
I can can imagine, yeah. Okay, so let's go back to, anyway, so you're now in, you're working on this radar station close to Singapore.
Yeah.
And you've got the station operating. Tell me about your life there. This is now, we're in early 1942, just before the fall of Singapore, aren't we, in fact?
Well, then life out there, I was stationed, like I say, up in the camp. There was no camp there. We were all in civvy digs. Well, when I was on, I used to lodge with two nurses from the First World War. One was 82 and the other one was 84. They were both spinsters. And they used to look after us, A1. They were good as gold, they were.
They were English?
Huh?
Were they English, these women?
English.
And they were living in Singapore?
No, this was Omea, before I went out to Singapore.
Oh, I see.
We're out in Singapore now.
I'm sorry about that. Don't worry.
No, I'm sorry about that.
So here you were in civilian digs?
Not in Singapore. No, RAF Lemberwang, which was an Aussie and New Zealand base.
And you went up to the station. Ah, okay.
Hang on, all right.
Kevin. Hold a second. I think I locked it.
Sorry.
No, hold. Sorry. So we're in Singapore.
Yeah.
And
is that on?
Yeah, it's on. Should be on. Just checking. Put my stick on the earphones.
I was going to say, I haven't pulled him out.
No, you're fine. You're doing fine. That's good. All right, so...
We're in Singapore.
Yeah.
And I went to... Like I say, we went to... RAF Sembawang, which is on Singapore Island. And then, after that, before I went on the radar in Malaya, I was at this building... little barracks there called Nee Soon Village, which was on Singapore Island as well. And then from there I went to a camp up in an Air Force camp, which was Kota Tinggi, attached to Kota Tinggi. And we were in there for about 3 months before our radar stuff came out. So our radar got there about a month or so before the war actually started in Iceland.
So this would be something like March 1940?
Or March. No,
it was February.
February.
So, yeah, okay, so it's around sort of January, beginning of January.
Yeah, beginning of January.
Yeah.
And then... When the radar came down, the first thing that we ever picked up was when they were bombing women right up north, up in Thailand and that place, it was Siam, as it was called. We could pick that up, and like Georgetown, which was, I don't know, Port Butterworth, and all around there, we got that. And we had another station about another 40 miles away, called Mersing. I never know what happened to that station because Mersing.
Okay. That's right, go on, yeah.
And we managed to track that lot. And all the time we were in the jungle, we only had one. We never got raided in the jungle, but where we were stationed about 3 or 4 miles away, and this little camp there, and they did give us one lot of bombs there, but never killed anyone, as luck would have it. And then we were there until the February, and then from there we went into, what's the name, Java, as it was called, loaded up with stuff, got on board at HMS Tedder, which was a wireless ship, that was.
Was this done in a hurry because you knew the Japanese were coming? You knew you had to get out quickly?
Eh?
Was that done in a hurry? Were you retreating? You knew.
Yeah, we had to get all our kit out. Because we had New Zealanders. These Maoris got most of our stuff down from the jungle and all like that. And then we loaded up. I was living like a lord on that ship because the three or four of us raided a Burman nappy before we left and loaded up with them. So. And got on that HMS Keller. And we got bombed consistently for about 4 or 5 hours. And the men chap on board, because of, we had a ship, the watch name had gone down by then, the Prince of Wales and the Repulse. And we had a chap from the Repulse on with us. He was steering them more or less in charge. He ordered full steam ahead with the anchor on. Can you imagine what happened? It's going round in circles. But when we eventually docked in Batavia, they said there was a hole for every day of the year in that boat, 365 holes. And there was only one person killed on that ship. And he was under the lifeboat, our boat. Well, they bombed that Bremen boat, it was pretty cool.
And where were you when the bombing was going on?
On board ship.
And where on the ship?
Oh, just in the aft of the ship. Had a little cabin there. Was lucky there, nothing dropped there.
And the ship was steaming around
the
anchor chain. Was that by mistake or?
No, well, he wasn't going to try to get out because they'd come right at him, wouldn't they? So they didn't know where he was going. And these blooming planes go.
So the ship, he deliberately commanded the ship.
Yeah, I think so. You know, there were some clever chaps during that war. And then he said, afterwards, he said, I'm coming in with you. I said, what for? He said, we were on bully beef and biscuits, and look what you're eating here. I'd given tins of ham and everything. And the other writing all joined in. Even getting some of that drink.
So you sailed from Singapore Island. Where did you go to? You went to Java, did you say?
Java, yeah.
Where exactly in Java?
Batavia, which is now called Jakarta.
And this was the Dutch East Indies.
Eh?
It was belonged to the Dutch, didn't it?
Yeah.
And what was it like then? You land in Batavia and Singapore. Oh, has Singapore fallen yet? Or?
Yeah, but Singapore fell one day after we got out.
And so you were very lucky to have...
We were very lucky. And I don't know, there's great women. The people out there in Singapore were very good, but I don't know. Everyone liked the service man there. All the women, millionaires out there, because we were all good. And the Sultan of Johor used to give us 10 cents a day on top of our money, which was only about threepence mine, but...
Made a difference.
It all made some difference. But anyway, when we got out there, we all worked simply in... there was a... What was it? About 15 of us. That was all that was in our unit. 15. 15 or 20. And a watchman came along. He was just outside of Java, outside of Batavia. Was an Air Vice Marshal Maltby. Very nice chap he was, too. And he came to see if we were all right. We got the station working there, all right. We picked up one or two raids. You know, inland, even onto Sumatra we could pick them up. But, when we got ordered to evacuate from there, they pulled the Bremen station down, didn't they? Pulled the Bremen thing right down. So they couldn't find out anything from there. And we got on a train to go to Tillijap, which was right on the south coast of Java. Open to get to Australia.
So this was a route. You were running away, really.
Yeah, well, we had to.
Of course, but it was...
On board the East Bremen train, we got about, I suppose, about a quarter of the way to Tillyjack, because no one got away from Tillyjack, really, not even the Bremen bosses. But anyway, we were on our way down there. And then we got ambushed on a train. We thought it was the Japs, but it wasn't. It was the Dutch, because they didn't know who was on there. They threw these hand grenades in, and we lost a hell of a lot of people there. They blew up the bridge where the train was going over. But that bridge got blown up just before we got there. But see these people. I had a mate there from come from South Shields. I went to his wedding just before we went over there, because he was up in North Wales with me. And he had his head cut right off, just like a chicken it was. Running around like a chicken, no head. You can never imagine a person doing that, can you? But that's what happened.
Because of the...
Well, I mean, he's still alive, but...
But the Dutch had thrown hand grenades, is that... Eh? That's what happened?
Yeah.
So what happened after the train was ambushed?
Well, we had to cross this river now. I don't know what the name of the river was. And all you had to cross on was a railway line suspended in the air, right? With the blooming signals above you, you could just go over the wire, and there was a very fast blowing river. There's quite a few who got drowned in there. You could never get out of that blooming thing. And from there we got into Mouse Paddy, a little place called Mouse Paddy, where the Yanks had their plight. They had all these Black Widow fighters in there, still in their boxes when we got there. And all the women, they'd gone. They'd all thrown out and fly bolt. So we spent a couple of hours ready. We got there with sledgehammers, lashing up what we could. And there's one fella there, I don't know how he managed to do it. He was buggering up the props, you know, the propellers of these, because they were separate from the train. He twisted all those somehow. They couldn't fly those. None of those planes could they fly. And we had stopped there until the Japs came. I don't know how long we were there, about a fortnight. And then they shifted us to Surabaya from there.
What was it like when the Japanese came in for the first time? Were you all terrified, I imagine? Well,
there weren't all that many Japs there. Most of them were Koreans, the guards. They were devils, they were. They were blooming cruel, they.
No, but when you were captured for the first time, how did that happen? They just came to the camp and...
No, when we got out this train, wasn't it? When we crossed this bridge.
Oh, I see. I didn't understand that. Oh,
when we got over this bridge, I know I slept on a pile of logs there for 2 days. The Japs had had out of it. We lost all our guns in that time, didn't we? Blimmin. They told not to take any guns with us.
So the train was ambushed by the Japanese?
Eh?
I thought you said the train was ambushed by the Dutch.
Yeah. Oh, no. But the Japanese were somewhere around. And we always... Everyone said it was the Dutch, but I have a mind about it. In those days, you didn't have time to go around finding where the blooming shrapnel came from.
Sure. So you're captured by the Japanese, and where are you taken to first?
Mouse Paddy. We were at Mouse Paddy, and they took us back there. Surabaya.
And that was a big camp?
That was a big camp, yeah.
And in the camp were Dutch civilians, I imagine?
There was Dutch there as well as that. Aussies, American, all sorts.
And civilians also?
Eh?
Civilians also?
Yeah.
Women and children?
No, there's a lot of Merchant Navy chaps here, you know, like from the American, and most of those joined the services. When they were, you know, they wanted to get in somewhere, didn't they? They were joined a civilian, so they were worse off than service men. And, yeah, I don't know, we... Surabaya was a nice place, not a place, seaport, see, it's number two town in, what's the name? Java, as it was, it was Indonesia now, isn't it? And then we had to go and work in parties from there. We were there for about 6 months, I suppose. Then we got shifted to the island in the Ambon group, the island of Heruku. That's where we went. And we had to build an aerodrome there from solid coral. And when I mean solid coral, it's been, and there's a lot of our people died there. And also cemetery was right alongside the beach. And when high tide came up, so the bodies got washed up again. And then, but a lot of people got, our lads got blinded there, you know. The white coral was sunshining on it, blew me. It's whiter than snow.
And what were conditions like? You were treated badly. You weren't fed enough. How were you treated?
Well, we weren't fed enough. No, we weren't fed enough. But the point was, all we had was a bowl of rice, pap, as we used to call it, because it was only water and rice. And then sometimes for dinner we'd have fried rice, in the nasi goreng, as they used to call it. You had fish in that, dried fish, or bananas, or any blooming thing. If you were lucky, you used to get turtle eggs in it.
Used to get what, sorry?
Turtle eggs, turtles. They're nice, eggs to eat, those turtle eggs. Yeah.
Did you talk to the islanders? Were you
from? Yeah. Well, they always spoke Dutch, didn't they? Or Malayan. So if they spoke Malayan, we could, most of us could contact them in Malayan and that. Then,
were they friendly, the islanders?
Oh, they're very friendly. The natives were very friendly. And they... In fact, when we were there, the Japanese wouldn't go in there, little bits of jungle there, without one of us. Because they used to bloody well knock the Japs' heads off. These and Manada, these out there, and they come from what's their name, Borneo, from the, like our Gurkhas, they were nice. I mean, they were all nice, those foreigners. Well, I say they're nice, but the only trouble was too many yarns used to get back to the blooming Japs. We found that when we were with the Dutch, well, they were buggers for telling you. It's Japs about us, you know. But when anyone escaped out there, they had a firing squad, didn't they? Because quite a few pilots tried to escape, you know. You didn't have any, you never had open hell.
And if they caught you, you were shot. They would.
Oh, out in front of all the rest of us.
This happened many times.
Yeah. And, there was one chap I know, he got away from them and he went on Timor. Managed to get to Timor. He was there throughout the war, this chap. You know, in the services, but he was there with the Dutch people and that. And when he got, lo and me, he looked well as anything when we met him next. But there it is.
So you were building... aerodromes on...
Well, it wasn't a case of building them. You had to cut the solid coral. And you know, it'd take you about 4 or 5 hours with a hammer and big chisel to get enough to put a blast in there. You had to put a... what's that? Blow the coral away. And this went on. You know, you're working 12 hours solid a day in the boiling sunshine, so you can imagine what. And all you had on was a G-string. What they call them today. I don't know what they call them today. The girls wear them today, don't they?
And so, I mean, it was, you were like slaves. It was a
slaves.
Very, very hard life. Where did you sleep, huh? Alf? Where, what was your accommodation?
Accommodation was a building with shampoo, with the bamboo and all that. And you laid on bamboo. That wasn't very comfortable, you know. And most of us, if you got dysentery, like I had one time, 108 times a day I used to pass. So you used to make a hole in the bottom of the bamboo, and they used to go underneath. It wouldn't be there in the morning because of rats and snakes used to eat the bloody stuff. It's amazing, though, when you think of it. It's a wonder more didn't die of, you know, fevers and that. And well, the first chap we left there, he came from, where'd he come from? Blackburn. First chap, Joe Campbell, I can always remember him. He's only a small chap. And when he died, they put him in like a little shed about this size, that body. And the following morning, I went to look for him, all they found was dust. Even his boots on the floor, all the worst was the metal parts left. These blooming termites, you know, these blooming white ants. They've eaten the body, not the bones. They couldn't eat the bones, because they don't go around anything. They go through it, like these big trees fall in the jungle. These jungles are blooming fascinating, really, aren't they? But I know before, I didn't tell you, but when we were on that other camp, but where I was on guard duty up at Kota Tinggi, a chap from Tavistock was up there with knees on, and I said, I'll walk one way, he'll walk, and we'll meet. And I got down where I was supposed to have met him. Couldn't see him, I walked on a bit further. There he was, petrified. I said, "What's up with you?" He was an animal in there. It was a black panther, you know. Before you could see the eyes. I said, "No, it isn't at all." I said, "It's these fireflies, you know. You see thousands of fireflies out there." And it was, a black panther. I said, "I'm going to talk to him." But look at him. Ken Tappan, I always remember him. I've seen him since. He's still alive. Now, he had an operation out there for appendix, so six people sat on him. No, nothing to put him asleep or anything. The surgeon happened on him, Dr. Tierney, Irish boy he was, and got him out, and he's still alive now. After that operation, he sewed him up with him and bamboo was there. Streak of, you know, because it cut off the thing. Yeah.
What were your, how did the Japanese treat you? Were they brutal?
Well, they were, but I mean, we took everything. That's why I fear nothing. At least I've got a chance to defend myself now, but then I couldn't because you get shot. If you try to defend yourself, yes.
Alf Burrows, Reel 3.
Yeah.
And so how long were you there on Ambon Island for, Alf?
About 18 months.
So we're now, if we follow this through, we're now into the middle of 1943.
43.
And, I mean, did you, it sounds so incredible, the story you're telling me, and you just talk about it in a very matter-of-fact way. I mean,
yeah, the point is, you just can't imagine. You've got a matter-of-fact way of living, didn't you? Because when you went out on parade, you'd be walking and you get something shoved in your back or back of a rifle or something, you know, with these bloody devils. You took that just as a normal procedure with those devils. But when we were on the island of Heruku there, there's some monkeys there, you know, as well. And these devils, they used to chain them up, these monkeys, these devils, and put the cigarettes out on them, burn them all the way. You hear these monkeys scream. Oh, terrible, didn't it? And we had a boy there called Peter Armand. He comes from Perth, in Yorkshire. And he'd done something wrong, I don't know exactly what it was. But they had him out in the boiling sun, and then they kept filling him up with water. Hose in his mouth. Eventually, he didn't die, but he was out of a state. He had beriberi after that. Well, beriberi, you could stick a bayonet through you, you wouldn't feel it. But then,